Support for the following program comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Additional funding comes from the Robert Bosch Foundation, the A.J. Fletcher Foundation, and from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. This is Soundings, a program of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Human rights and civil societies in mainland China and Latin America, this week on Soundings. Join me now for a conversation with historian Zhang Zhilian of the University of Peking. After that, philosopher Eduardo Rabosi of the University of Buenos Aires discusses human rights and democracy in Argentina. Over the last few years, political commentators have struggled to make sense of the rapid and complex changes in the world's ideological maps. To achieve an understanding, many have focused on the idea of a civil society, that is, the value of independent forces in education, the arts, and religion, which mediate between the individual and the state and underscore political transformation. The National Humanities Center recently invited an international group of scholars, diplomats, politicians, and journalists to consider democracy and civil societies around the world. Among the participants at this gathering was Zhang Zhilian, a senior historian from the University of Peking. According to Zhang Zhilian, the idea of a civil society in contemporary mainland China is a two-edged sword. The right can use the concept to serve the interests of political monopolies, while the left can use it to legitimate protest movements. I asked Zhang Zhilian to comment on the relationship in China today between intellectuals and the politicians who run his country.
Well, you know, it's very difficult to make a marked distinction between historians and politicians because in our country, every intellectual would like, traditionally speaking, to serve the country. Mm-hmm. So anything that has to do with the destiny, with the fate of a country, would also be considered as very important for historians.
Is it fair to say, Zhang Zhilian, that to be an intellectual in modern China is automatically to place yourself in opposition to the state? That it's automatically to be for human rights and the state is automatically to be against human rights?
No. This is a very complicated question. You see, as I said, in Chinese, old Chinese tradition, all the men of letters, literati, wanted to serve the country, to serve the people, if you like. Politics and intellectuals, they are inseparable. Now, the question is, how will the new leadership deal with intellectuals? They wanted to use the intellectuals, their expertise, their knowledge, to build socialism. But if you propagate bourgeois ideas, well, in quotation, bourgeois ideas, then you stand in opposition to the socialist regime.
Is it a question of timing? Is it a question of speed and the rapidity with which these steps are instituted? It sounds to me as though you're saying that the communist leadership and the intellectuals of China essentially want the same things, but they disagree about the means. They disagree about the timing and the way that we will go about instituting these reforms.
And the timing is very important because it, in the first 10 years, from the angle of the leadership, you have to re-educate first the intellectuals before you could really trust them.
Well, now, wait a minute. To re-educate them, let me be politely disputatious here, Zhang Zhilian. When you say to re-educate them, what you're saying essentially is get them to think the way the leadership thinks. And yet the leadership is talking out of two sides of its mouth. It's telling the intellectuals that it can have freedom of expression, that they can have freedom of expression, but on my terms, basically. Isn't there a hypocrisy there?
Well, they are very sincere. I mean, you can
well, sincerity.
They really believe what they're saying.
Right.
Now, to re-educate an intellectual meant, at that time, 1949, meant that your old ideas about imperialism, say, about foreign aggression, about the cultural infiltration. Now, these things did happen. We had imperialist aggression in China. We had cultural infiltration. All these happened. But in the minds of the intellectuals, they saw these things as positive things.
The leadership did not.
Leadership did not, at least as far as cultural infiltration was concerned. Imperialist aggression, yes, we agree. We agree. Because so many of these foreign countries had occupied our country and had settlements or concessions in China. You see, they even had military forces in China. Your Marines were in China.
Yep.
See? But intellectuals then were not aware that that was a kind of infiltration.
Zhang Zhilian, we have just come from a conference here at the National Humanities Center called The Idea of a Civil Society. We're talking here not about the individual, not about the state, but about all of the voluntary associations that exist between the two. Do you think that it is arrogant of Western intellectuals to talk of teaching the Chinese people what it means to have a civil society?
Of course, it's arrogant, I would say.
What kind of interplay should we have when these two societies talk to one another?
This is an academic question in the first place, because you have to define. What do you mean by civil society?
Oh, now you're playing cat and mouse with me again. I mean, let's talk about it in practical terms. That is to say, autonomous, voluntary efforts and associations to improve the one's civic existence. Not one's individual life and not the life of the political state.
I understand perfectly what you are saying. There is something or some elements in a society which are neither state nor individual, something in between.
Does that exist in China?
All along history, that has existed, as if we were talking prose all the time. We didn't know it's called prose.
Fair enough.
That has existed all along in our history.
Well, let me put it to you this way, Zhang Zhilian. What do the Chinese people have to learn from the West, and what can they teach Westerners about the nurturing and the encouragement of a civil society?
Well, we don't call it civil society, but still all these things exist. From political parties, you can call it. Because, you see, we have 8 political parties apart from the Communist Party. So these political parties, they form a part of the civil society. Academic associations, art societies, youth league, women union, all of these, they are part of the civil society.
And they are not simply tools of socialist or communist ideology.
Well, there you are using another term, tool. What do you mean by tool?
Vehicles, means to advance ideological ends.
Well, you see, in our society, under socialist system, there is nothing which can be said to be totally independent of the state. I don't know what the situation is in your country, but in our country, you have to consider this fact. Even though I am president of 2 academic associations, and they are one, the Association for the Study of French History, another, Beijing Society for Comparative International Studies. No, they are voluntary associations. They are non-profit. They are academic. things.
But you don't think of yourself as a tool or a means or a vehicle for statist thinking.
You can say that I'm vehicle of the people, if you like. I serve the people. I want to promote this study of French history in China. I want to promote the study of human rights in China. And all these things are helpful to the state.
Are you fearful about answering to anybody in the political hierarchy? Do you speak your mind openly, or do you sort of check with the authorities, as it were?
What do you mean, check with?
Oh, yes. I mean, do you look for a stamp of approval about the way you talk and the things you write about as a Chinese intellectual?
Well, it depends on whether you speak it openly, loudly, or closed session. Yeah. If it is a closed session, I can be very frank. I can say anything I like, but provided I don't publish it, you see?
I see.
You see, if there is a reporter, a journalist, who wants to publish my speech, I say, well, be careful.
Right.
You must show it to me first before it's published.
Zhang Zhilian, are you optimistic about, let me put it to you this way, your grandchildren? What do you want for them? Are you optimistic about their civic, their individual, social lives in the People's Republic of China?
Well, I think I'm optimistic. If my son of my or my daughter, my grandson were in the United States, I would not be optimistic.
You wouldn't?
No, I wouldn't.
Why is that?
Oh, because you have so many temptations here. You see, you have so many bad habits here. Of course, they exist in a certain degree in China too. But you see, in this place, you witness too many things.
We have too much choice,
too
do
much
we? Do we have too many options in the West, the way we live our lives?
Oh, no. Oh, you have. Well, you can say that formally you have many, many, many choices. But in fact, you don't have many choices. You ask your next generation.
You're telling me that the Chinese people are freer than the American people?
Well, they are freer from many abuses. Drugs. Is that AIDS?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is becoming a problem in mainland
China. But it's in a very, very minor degree,
Zhang Zhilian, I want to thank you for your participation on Soundings, a senior scholar of French history. Two terms you've been here at the National Humanities Center. I wish you well in your work.
Thank you very much. My work here has been very fruitful, and I thank you and thank Bob and Kent and all the staff members and librarian for the help which they have given us. Thank you very much.
This is Soundings, a program of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Human rights and civil societies, this week on Soundings. Join me now for a conversation with Eduardo Rabosi of the University of Buenos Aires. Last fall, Rabosi participated in a conference at the National Humanities Center that examined the recent and rapid emergence of democracy around the world following the collapse of the old Soviet Empire. As you'd expect, the journalists, diplomats, scholars, and politicians at this conference produced a variety of opinions about the prospects for these new democracies. But there was agreement about the importance of one concept underlying many of the changes we've seen in the world's ideological maps. This is the idea of a civil society, a society that in practice cherishes human rights and that's willing to grant power to voluntary forces in education, the arts, religion, and commerce to mediate between the state and the individual. Eduardo Rabosi is a professor of legal philosophy at the University of Buenos Aires. In the 1980s, he served as a member of the Argentine National Commission for the Disappeared and as the Argentine Undersecretary for Human Rights in the administration of President Raúl Alfonsín. I asked Eduardo Rabosi to discuss the idea of a civil society and human rights in Argentina today.
Well, I think that according to international standards, I could say that it's a fairly acceptable situation. We managed after the December 1983, that is when the democracy came back to Argentina, to start restating, reshaping our civil society institutions and relationships. The government led by President Alfonsín, I think, was extremely good. I think this is one of the aspects of his success in trying to give an example of how democratic institutions really work or have to work.
How did President Alfonsín formally, legally, institutionally react to the problem of the disappeared?
Well, Alfonsín designed a policy that was, I would say, completely new according to international standards, because to my mind, as far as I know, for the first time in contemporary history, a government decided to investigate into the crimes committing or leading to human rights violations in its own country, and this is crucial, following strictly the rule of law.
Now, the people who perpetuated these crimes, the men, I take it, mainly men who ran the military junta, they weren't about to just sit still and watch themselves be put onto the griddle, as the expression goes. I mean, they created an amnesty for themselves to get themselves off the hook, did they not?
Yes, during the military regime. Yeah. So one of the first law passed by the new Congress was a law just nullifying this amnesty law. And this opened the road for the whole legal strategy that Alfonsín designed.
All right, now how many people have actually been prosecuted and punished and identified as the ones responsible for the disappearance?
Well, first of all, the members of the three first juntas were tried, and some of them were sentenced in at least two cases to life penalties.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, at least 100 people were indicted. Now, there were problems with the policy. It's for reasons that it will be very long to discuss or to present, the policy did not went quick enough, was not follow a pattern, a timing that could lead in 2 years, no more than that, to a completion of the policy.
Does this mean, Eduardo, that there are a lot of guilty people still walking around?
No. The problem is that, well, yes and no. Concerning legal matters, the problem was that when Alfonsín handed over the government to President Menem, mm-hmm. there were at least 45 people indicted still, well, or waiting for indictment before the courts. And this is a difficult thing to do. After five years or so, you cannot have this problem still open.
Well, there's the process of there's the question of due process and receiving speedy justice.
Well, not only that. I think that within the policy itself, there were internal and external influences that somehow mm-hmm. delayed a firm and quick answer to the whole problem. So to your question, whether there are people. At present in Argentina, as you know, mm-hmm. President Menem pardoned the members of the junta, pardoned 45 high-rank officers that were either indicted or in the process of being indicted, and he also pardoned almost 140 Montoneros that, for one reason or other, were having judicial problems. And so this is the actual situation in Argentina. These people are again in the streets.
All right, now there's an organization, there is a movement in Argentina here in the early 1990s called Nunca Más, Never Again. Do you think, Eduardo Rabossi, that vastly to oversimplify, that Argentina has learned its lesson? Is it possible that this sort of thing will happen again, that it will continue?
Well, logically, let me...
One hopes.
It's always possible in any country. Now, in Argentina, I think that what was then produced an extraordinary impression within the standard citizen, and I would like to think within the armed forces. So, in general, I think that the people are they have a quite clear idea about that not repeating this again. I'll tell you just one figure. even in the peak of Menem's popularity, a 75% to 80% of the Argentine population was against Menem's pardons, for instance. And I think that this gives a clear idea of how people reacted to all this, you know, reviewing of the past and how they feel today.
Eduardo, did you learn things about the human heart, about human behavior that surprised you? I mean, here you are, as it were, a man of the world. You make your living as a philosopher. By profession, you look at the way the human mind and human social policy works. Were you surprised at what happened?
Yes, I must confess that not only in my case, but all the members of the National Commission were somehow shocked every day for 9 months, just listening to and or investigating or looking to for people. My point is, my feeling is that when these processes of violence start in a country, this kind of you know, people killing each other and with no respect for nothing, just for supposed ideals, etc. Then the degradation they can reach has no limits. I mean, I could tell you lots and lots of stories that I'm sure will frighten you or surprise you to see to what extent human nature can be degraded in these situations.
Let's move in the other direction, Eduardo Rebossi. One of the reasons that you're here at the Humanities Center is to participate in a conference on the idea of a civil society. We're not talking about the individual. We're not talking about the state. We're talking about all that area in between the two. Are you optimistic, given Argentina's questionable track record here with human rights, that your country will come to the creation of a civil society? I mean, it exists already. Tell me what will happen in the future. What's your sense of that?
My sense is that in order to operate democracy in proper terms, we need to have some more deep sense within the citizens of Argentina of first, belonging and working and participating in intermediate groups or societies.
Education, religion, civic association.
That is, this is a start in Argentina. I mean, in this sense, I think that there is a change, a very deep change within the population, at least in the cities, concerning problems that some years ago were supposed to be solved for everyone by the government or the, you know, the county authorities, etc. And now they are starting, people are starting to think in problems within certain limits and asking themselves about the possibility of getting some sort of solution for themselves.
What about the role of the intellectuals in the creation or the sustenance of the civil society in Latin America? You have this wonderful, Latin America has always had a wonderful reputation for creativity, wonderful writers and artists and poets and musicians. Is there a legitimate place for them?
Oh yeah, sure, it is. And as you know, they even managed to survive under dictatorship conditions. So why not under democracy? The problem to me is that, and I am talking as a philosopher, that the building up of a civil society is not a literary matter or an artistic matter. It's a, well, I won't say more serious, but more a different question, a different problem. And it's related, as you suggested, to education. It's related to a certain, I could do not like to stress too much the sense of the word, but I could say a moral point of view within society, a view in which...
An ethical point of view.
An ethical point of view. In Argentina, I'm not suggesting that we are devils and the rest of the country are pure angels. I mean, you get corruption everywhere, etc., etc. But there are certain limits and certain, especially not limits, only limits, but ways of feeling about you know, what happened, what is happening. And this is something that has to be reshaped. For instance, I'm quite firmly believe that question concerning inflation, for instance, or economic problems or social problems are not only technical problems, are problems that arise also because people's responsible or non-responsible of the situation become insensitive without, you know, a communitarian way of looking at problems and much more egoistically looking at that. So this is clear in the process of inflation, for instance. Inflation is a typical process in which it's half economic and half psychological and moral.
These are lessons that North Americans are learning as well. Eduardo Rabosi, I want to thank you for your participation on Soundings, your visit here to the National Humanities Center. Buena suerte en tu obra.
Gracias, muchas gracias, and thank you to you and the members of the center for this kind invitation. Thank you.
This is Soundings, a program of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. You've been listening to the fourth segment in a series of programs about the idea of a civil society. The speakers were Zhang Zhilian, a senior historian from the University of Peking, and Eduardo Rabosi, a legal philosopher from the University of Buenos Aires. If you'd like a cassette copy of their comments, send $5 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Please ask for program number 605. That's program number 605, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, the zip code 27709. Send $2 for a complete listing of Soundings discussions available on cassettes. And when you write, please mention the call letters of this radio station. The National Humanities Center welcomes your comments. Next week, join me for conversations featuring the documentary filmmaker Ross Spears and the political satirist Doug Marlette. Ross Spears will discuss his latest project, a film entitled To Render a Life, a commemoration of the documentarians James Agee and Walker Evans. Doug Marlette will discuss his latest book, a collection of political cartoons and commentary entitled In Your Face. Thanks for listening to Soundings. Please join me again next week at this time on this radio station. Until then, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Partial support for this program came from the Robert Bosch Foundation, the A.J. Fletcher Foundation, and from Carolina Power and Lights, where listening generates powerful ideas. Major funding for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Human rights and civil societies in mainland China and Latin America, this week on Soundings. I'm Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Zhang Zhilian of the University of Peking discusses intellectuals and politics in contemporary China. Eduardo Rabosi of the University of Buenos Aires talks about human rights in Argentina. Human rights and civil societies, some answers and insights from the National Humanities Center, this week on Soundings.